the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good morning from the Crop Doctors Podcast studio in Stoneville. Tom and I are going to take this one on our own today, and we're going to talk about paraquat drift. It's a time of year where we're getting calls about that.
We both get calls about that. And like I just said to Jason before we started recording, I feel like a weed scientist this time of the year because I get lots and lots and lots of pictures that are associated with some form of herbicide injury.
Yeah, and I think 2024 is just tailor-made for the problem with the weather that we've had over the past 5 or 6 weeks, depending on where you're standing. I drove yesterday with those crazy little showers that were going around and saw three different planting operations leaving the field. You know, one of them in a downpour, one of them just in a rain hard enough to make the field sticky. Yesterday afternoon, you either saw dust flying behind tractors or water standing, depending on
where you were geographically.
And last weekend, some areas got big rain, some areas got no rain. I haven't had much at my house south of Greenville in the past 2 weeks.
We haven't had a lot, but I don't, like I've continued to say, we don't have a rain gauge anymore.
So. Well, we even talked about it yesterday here. It rained a lot more on the north end of the farm here than it did on the south end of the farm.
It did.
And a lot of times you can see them move across.
Yeah, you can stand at the Hurt Building and watch a rain shower on the north side of the farm, north of the railroad tracks in Stoneville proper, and then look south and see nothing. Or vice versa.
The Stoneville Hole is what we have always called that, because usually they split and go around us, but sometimes they don't quite split enough.
They do.
So, Tom, I got to ask you my question since nobody else is in here. Kids are getting out of school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring you back in your memory bank. When you were growing up, what was your summer activity? Say when you were not quite old enough to work, have a summer job. So what was Tom Allen doing?
He mowed a lot of grass. A bunch of those summers I mowed a bunch of grass. Middle school, early high school. We moved around a bunch. Didn't do too many other things. Played some golf some summers.
Okay.
So that's what suburban kids do.
So where did you live, say, when you were 13? What state were you in at that point?
Let me sit here and think a second. 13, I would have been 1984-ish. I got to think a second. Would have been in Ohio, probably outside of Akron, Ohio.
I've never been to Akron.
I was going to say, you've probably never been to Akron, Ohio. That's big. For those of y'all that don't know, that's like you get up there into what they will more loosely refer to as the Rust Belt states, but the Akron, Ohio area, lots and lots and lots of rubber. So it's Goodyear and Firestone would be your two main manufacturers in there.
I could find Ohio on a map.
That would be northeastern Ohio. So you're not far south from like Cleveland, and you're north and east of Columbus, which essentially would be in the center.
Again, could have found Ohio, couldn't have found Akron.
I understand. Okay, you'd contacted me this morning, and we loosely talked about paraquat. And I think this is a great time of year to talk about paraquat drift. Do you want to start or at least mention the research that has been done here in Stoneville? Because you've had multiple graduate students work on simulated paraquat drift.
We probably worked on it 10 consecutive years. So Tim Walker and I started, man, Tom, I want to say like 2012. Tim and I had some stuff going, and it was becoming a big problem at that point, early season, this time of year. We played around with it, and we did it like we had done simulated Roundup drift research on rice.
And that's important, and we should back up just a second. When you say simulated drift, why don't you set the stage for that? What's really associated with that? Because there's a difference between doing what would be considered quote-unquote drift research or research associated as a result of drift. You're doing simulated drift research with a reduced concentration of the herbicide.
Right. So most everyone in Mississippi did the dicamba trainings the first 2 or 3 years when we were conducting those trainings for Extend. And the work that Dan Reynolds did and Trent Irby did some too with dicamba on soybeans, that was legitimate drift research. So they were spraying a strip of soybeans, like say with a high boy or some kind of tractor mounted sprayer, and then they were tracking how far it went and how severe the injury was at the different distances from where they sprayed it. So that was legitimate drift research. And in my memory, that was really some of the first real drift stuff that had been done, you know, research-wise. Everything we had done prior to that, which 95% of that had been in rice, had done some in corn too, was simulated drift. So the way we do it in a rice plot, which is really small, I mean, our rice plots are
like 15 feet wide, 15 feet long.
Yep. We put a known rate out. So in the case of all of Ben Lawrence's stuff, and Ben did our first big graduate student project, and this would have been like 2015 or so that Ben started, Ben used 1/10 of the application rate. At the time, our suggested rate for paraquat in the spring targeting Palmer amaranth was 3/4 of a pound AI or 3 pints per acre of a 2 pound paraquat product. Ben was using 1/10 of that. If you go and read stuff about a commercial drift event, usually the rate that impacts the non-target crop falls somewhere between 1/10 and 1/100 of the original application rate. So we took the high end of that, assuming we were going to be demonstrating worst case scenario. So really all we've done is just expose the crop to what amounts to a sublethal dose of the herbicide. So we're not really drifting it. We're spraying it directly.
You're spraying a direct application of a reduced concentration of that product.
The dose determines the poison, right? Whether it's herbicides or antibiotics in humans, you know, whatever, the dose determines the poison. And what you never know in a commercial drift event is what the rate was that hit the non-target crop. If you could tell that, then you would have a whole lot better information to make an informed decision moving forward. But that's the maybe the one thing you can't know, or one of the things you can't know, is what rate actually hit that crop. So that's why we do multiple rates in that research. If this rate, we evaluate it and say, all right, that produced 60% injury, and this lower rate produced 20% injury, and then you can kind of calibrate your eye to what those two look like, and then you get called to a commercial field and say, all right, well, it's somewhere between there. I don't have any idea what the actual rate is, but it's somewhere between there because this section of this commercial field looks like it's 60% injury or looks like it's 20% injury.
Well, and I would say probably early on in that research, you were leaning towards worst case scenario.
Oh, yeah, we definitely did. Ben did, man, a ton of stuff. To me, the big thing he did was timings on rice. So he started at spiking rice and went all the way out to PD. So that's reproductive growth. PD is a little bit after beginning of reproductive growth in rice. He did some fertilizer applications after the rice had been exposed to paraquat. Different scenarios there. He did some tank mixes. Another thing that you often don't know when you get called to a commercial field that's been affected by a drift event is what was with the paraquat, because oftentimes that informs your replant possibility. For example, we can't plant rice into a field that has metolachlor on it. Well, metolachlor is one of the products that is present in a lot of premixes that we use combined with paraquat treating soybeans, right? So if we have a sufficient enough rate of metolachlor in that drift event, then we can't replant rice into it. Ben did a lot of different combinations there, corn herbicides, cotton herbicides, soybean herbicides. During that first year that he was working, we started getting a lot of the late season calls. And all these questions came up about getting paraquat on this rice and it's headed, or I'm about to drain it. How bad is this? And so that's where Justin McCoy came in. Justin was finishing up here, and so we put him on a project looking at all the late season aspects of paraquat exposure on rice. So then about the time Justin finishes up, we've got all Ben's information and all Justin's information, but then we've got another list of questions that we still don't have answers to. So Tamika Sanders started about that time, and Tamika came on through like 2019, 2021, I think were the 3 years that she worked, and she answered questions that we had gotten in the field that we didn't have answers for. For example, this rice has paraquat on it, but the grass is growing. Can I spray it? Your inclination is, no, man, because you can't injure it any more than it already is. You're going to kill it. When, in fact, with most of our rice herbicides, it's okay to go ahead and manage that field. Another big one that Tamika answered for us was, what happens if my rice gets hit twice with paraquat? Maybe it gets hit in the seedling stage with a burn down application, but then it also gets hit late season sometime after reproductive growth. So that's a double whammy, right? That one's kind of driven by the late season part of it. The yield reduction was dictated less by the early season exposure and more by the late season exposure.
That ends up setting the plant back when it is injured by one of these early season events.
Correct.
And that's not something that's easy to define because, again, I mean, you just alluded to, you have no idea what else was with it. And the other thing I think, and I don't think you'd mentioned this in case I spaced out, was I was ended up with lots of questions at this point in the year as the plant pathologist that, hey, I'm looking at, say, corn, for example, or rice, and I'm seeing lesions that are on this actual leaf blade. What caused that? It's got to be a disease. I'm like, well, no, it could be herbicide. And then you get the question, well, we didn't spray anything around here. How far does that come from? If that's what ends up happening, because you've always impressed upon me, some of these products that we apply as herbicides will be aerosolized from the environment, or some will move a long distance. How far?
It depends. That's the wiggle out of it answer, Tom. I think we've tracked it a long ways, and I'm not even going to tell you what long ways is, because there's no way for you to know definitively that this track I'm following came from this one source.
No,
you can suspect that it does, but you can't confirm that. But what I will say related to what you mentioned is, and I say this often when I'm talking to people about drift, the stuff that has the worst reputation for drift is the stuff that tells on itself the worst when it gets where it's going. So that's paraquat, that's glyphosate, that's 2,4-D, that's dicamba, that's loyant in rice, grandstand in rice, stam in rice. The symptoms show up pretty quick, and they make a pretty showy symptom. Liberty would fall in this category too. A lot of those are non-selective or close to non-selective in the case of paraquat, Liberty, glyphosate, and then 2,4-D and dicamba are selective but pretty much affect broadleaf plants across the board. When we have a lot of applications going on, it's not hard to find injury symptoms in proximity to an application that's been made.
Well, then everybody always wants you to point to the bad neighbor. And you get that, and I get that. Less so on my side of things, but I usually get the, well, where'd it come from? Who did it to me? Well, that's outside of the purview of my position.
Yeah, well,
I'm not supposed
in our case,
to get into that.
In our case, the Bureau of Plant Industries, that falls under their responsibilities in determining that. You know, our responsibility is helping make crop management decisions in how am I going to manage this crop moving forward from the day that we're standing there looking at it. That's where our responsibility lies with it.
Well, and I don't even know that I should bring this up, but have you ever seen anything bad enough to zero it out?
Yes. We've had replants.
But that's not the frequent event or the most frequent event in those situations.
I will say with paraquat drift onto corn, onto rice, which is the two most common that we have with paraquat drift. Most often it's a small percentage of the affected field. And just as soon as I say that, somebody's going to say, well, I lost the whole field, and quite possibly did. But if you take them collectively, a lot of times it's what we call across the turn row drift. And then there are bad examples of bigger geography being affected. I have seen some that would just break your heart. I mean, big acres. I think my strategy on it has changed over time. Going back to that metolachlor example on a replant, now I err towards keeping it more so than I err towards replanting it. And so you take today, for example, we're getting towards the backside, if we're not already on the backside of the rice planting window.
Mm-hmm.
We had Hartke in here or on here a few weeks ago and made the comment there is no replant seed.
Yeah.
And then two, if you had seed to replant, you don't know what the concentration of metolachlor or zidua or whatever other product might have been with the paraquat. You don't know what concentration of that is there and whether that the second planting of the rice is going to emerge. Say the rice was in the two-leaf stage, so maybe it's been in the ground for 4 weeks. Well, that's 4 weeks on the planting date. If everything was fine for a replant, there's no herbicide concentration there that's going to in the soil that's going to influence the replant, you're probably at a wash on what you're going to lose from the injury from the paraquat compared with the loss on the planting date. And that's, again, circumstantial because it depends on the dose, and the injury may be worse in some cases than others.
You're just doing a lot of consoling of somebody if they have that situation and trying to talk them off the ledge, especially this year.
A strange thing about paraquat drift, particularly on rice, less so on corn. When we have Roundup drift on rice, and we've had tons of Roundup drifters. Over the years I've been doing this, for sure, we've had some really bad years for Roundup drift. Well, if the rice is not dead, in a couple of weeks, you kind of know which direction you're going to go. It's going to start to regrow. It's at least going to start putting on new growth. For whatever reason, and I've never been able to truly say the cause of this, when paraquat affects a rice field, it just kind of what we call sits on it, and the rice doesn't grow. And again, depends on the dose that hits it in the drift event, it may be 3 or 4 weeks before that crop really turns a corner and starts to grow. Well, that's a long time to sit and wait and wonder, like you said. And then two, never in a drift, or rarely in a drift event, does whatever drifted affect the weeds. So the weeds keep growing, and then you got to farm the field, because you can't take a rice field and let grass grow for 4 weeks and then expect that you're ever going to clean it up after that. That'll be impossible. So you've got to manage the field, but then you're wondering, is this stuff even going to survive while I'm investing money in managing it? It's a sticky thing to navigate in that time between when the drift occurs and when the crop takes off and starts growing, regardless of how close to the original yield potential that you're going to get. With yield potential, the earlier the drift occurs, the closer you're going to get back to the original yield potential. With the early season stuff that we did, when we put paraquat on at one leaf, we pretty much got back to the original yield potential. We produce 60%+ injury at 7 days after we've exposed the rice to paraquat, but we'd get back to close to the original yield potential. And then the later in the growth stages we went, the less yield potential we were able to recover out to those last treatments that we did where I said at PD, and they basically made no rice.
Well, and the hardest part about this year is all our planting's been stacked up. I mean, just drive up and down the road. Everything's been stacked together. The rice, the corn, the soybeans, everything was, because it rained early and now it started to rain again. And very few people have had enough good measurable field days to jump in there and get some things taken care of.
We should have talked about that first, Tom. That's the years when the drift is the worst, in my opinion, is the years where we have a weather pattern like we've been in. Work's getting stacked up because the rain stacks up. A lot of our planting dates are overlapping that may not overlap in a more favorable weather year. Our soybean planting wouldn't be as compressed as it is, certainly, and most of our corn would have been up and going before planting some of these other crops, and then rice is right in there with it. We have less cotton in proximity to rice. Cotton and corn certainly are a problem. But when everything stacks up, I mean, you can go back in time and look at it. If I had any kind of stats on it, but I know the first year I was here in Stoneville, we replanted a significant amount of rice due to Roundup drift. This is before we even had glyphosate-resistant Palmer, and it was a year similar to this. It just rained and rained and rained, and we would work one day a week, 2 days a week, and then the one of the 2 days during the week you could work, the wind might be blowing.
Yeah, I mean, heck, like the last 2 days we talked about before we started recording, I mean, it was like a 5% chance of rain today, and driving from home this morning, it was raining. And then if you look at long-range forecasts from where we're sitting here right now, it looks like 5 days of rain again they're calling for next week. So even if you've had a chance to get in the field, then the wind's blowing.
Right. And so all that conspires to people do stuff that they might not do in other circumstances. They're trying to make a crop too, and some unfortunate things happen. But the year makes a huge difference. I mean, I've had years where I had very few calls, and then there is other years, and this is certainly not the worst one we've had by any means, but other years, it just, the circumstances conspire to make it a problem.
No, but man, there's a bunch of acres that hadn't been planted yet. And I don't know, I can't get a good guesstimation of that, but I drove by some yesterday, scratched my head like, well, I wonder what they're going to put in there at this point. That's.
And two, with a field that, say, is not planted today, they may have intended to plant it 3 weeks ago.
That's right.
And so their burn down has played out by that point. But we intended to plant it 3 weeks ago. Therefore, we intended for it to get another residual herbicide 3 weeks ago. But now we've got to make a post-emergence treatment on it of something to control the weeds that have emerged during the time that it's been raining.
Jason, with all that said, what's your biggest take-home point at this point in the season related to paraquat drift?
I think awareness is good, and I think we're a lot more careful than we were 10 years ago.
I'd say based on the number of ground rigs you see, we do a lot more application via ground than we did probably a decade ago via air.
In my world, when there's a new weed problem or a new thing, like we start using a lot of paraquat when the resistant pigweeds got really bad, and then we started having some off-target issues with paraquat. At some point, my call volume goes down a little bit because people have had it, and then it happens to them again, and they remember how bad it was or how bad it wasn't the time before, and so they don't call as much about it. So it's harder for me to tease out the scope of it, but I still think that this year, even though we've had some hiccups, we've had years that have been much worse, and so I commend everybody for being aware of it and making good efforts, you know, even though accidents happen. But I think our awareness is good, and we're cautious with it.
Well, and I think that's the important point to make at this point in the season. It's still pretty young. I keep trying to tell myself that. It's only May. It's only May. Calm down. It's only May.
It's been a hard crop to get going. It feels like we've been planting for 3 months. And in some cases we have. You know, we had that little bit of February corn, and now it's May, and there's still a distance to go in some areas. And then some just look wonderful.
Yeah. And just driving around, I think some places look pretty spectacular at this point.
The weather is the story of 2024 so far, at least in my world.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, appreciate the time this morning. That's good. I think it's important information. I think it's good to get it out there. And people just be aware that they can pick up the phone and call any of us at any point in time and have a conversation. Sometimes there's not necessarily a solution, but sometimes it's just a shoulder to lean on, and sometimes that's important as well.
Yeah, and I can give you some more specifics on numbers that maybe apply to your specific incidents more so than these generalities that we've been talking about in here.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Thanks, Tom.
Anytime.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.